welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 13, 2021. A South Sudanese doctor is saving lives in South Africa.
I think saving life is all that matters to me. I don't enjoy losing my patient. I don't believe that people die because it's their time. People die because out of negligence, the fact that we don't try enough to save those people's lives.
And dismissed Sudanese diplomats protest.
We have learned during our work at the foreign ministry that our main duty is to defend the Sudanese national interest, high integrity, Sudanese identity and sovereignty. I swear by God that we have never borne down our heads to whoever they are.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese doctor is saving lives at a hospital in South Africa. Dr. Emmanuel Malesh Taban says he uses a medical procedure known as bronchoscopy to treat COVID-19 patients. Dr. Taban, who works at a Mediclinic Midstream Hospital in Pretoria, says COVID-19 patients can survive if doctors use his procedure to suck mucus from lungs of an infected COVID-19 patient. The London-based Pan-African magazine called The New African has named Taban among 100 influential leaders making changes in Africa.
Since the COVID-19 surfaced from China in 2019, they found that we have been told a lot of misinformation that coronavirus does not cause mucus plug, and we've been told that patient coronavirus, once they will stay in life support for 5 to 7 days, and they might develop something called what we call H-type lung involvement. And those patients, you struggle to put oxygen in their lungs. And that's what we've been told. And of course, I've lost quite a few patients. And then that's when I decided, you know what, I want to look into their lungs. And that's when we found that actually those patients, they don't die because they get lung fibrosis, but they die because of the mucus in their lungs. And since we start performing mucus from patients with COVID-19, we save a lot of lives. So majority of my patients, almost 90% of them, they survive. So it's actually very good. It's a procedure that's known to pulmonologists for a long time. But I think because out of the fear, that's why everybody was afraid to do the bronchoscopy. Doctors from Germany, all over the world, they're having that fear that they're going to be infected. So I think for me, I didn't know why my patients were dying. That was the most important thing.
I mean, on a personal level, you have taken the risk of doing what your other colleagues are afraid to do. What is your motivation for taking up this procedure?
I think saving life is all that matters to me. I don't enjoy losing my patients. I don't believe that people die because it's their time. People die because I think God wanted to die. People die because out of negligence, the fact that we don't try enough to save those people's lives. So for me, I always motivated to do better and to be good in what I want to do. And I think that's probably what motivates me. And I've always been very passionate about what I do. And you know, the sad reality is that if somebody dies, you have to deal with the relative. You see the emotions. They leave families. They leave children. They leave the world forever. So, I mean, if you can do something to make sure that they stay longer, I think for me that's more important.
Right now, people listening to me and you in Juba or in other parts of South Sudan would be wondering and asking, when is Dr. Emmanuel Malesh Taban coming to save lives in South Sudan?
I would love to come home and do some work. But the sad reality is that South Sudan is where it is because of the current political situation. And if somebody guarantee me, Professor Rachmash and Salva Kiir, that they're not going to be running on the street shooting people, killing each other because of the power struggle, then I'll be willing to come home. Because what's the point of coming home? Then tomorrow you're a refugee. I mean, you're well aware that most of the people are in refugee camp because of senseless war that has been fought between the two, just out of greed, not because of anything particular. So until we have a genuine peace, I think it's going to be difficult for someone actually out of his mind to go back and try to do something in South Sudan, because at the end of the day, you build whatever you build, they will destroy it. And that's the reality. So I think as long as the two is still struggling for power, I think South Sudan will not actually be in good hands. I think war will never stop. That's the reality.
Let's talk about South Africa. I listened to President Cyril Ramaphosa. He sent a strong message to South Africans to observe health, Ministry of Health directives so that they can, the country can curb the spread of the pandemic. Can you just tell us what you deal with on a daily basis where you work?
Yeah, I think since we have the second wave, there are quite a lot of people quite infected with coronavirus. I think South Africa is not different from the rest of African countries where people are choose to be lawless than actually observing rules. So people are not quarantining, people are not social distancing, people are not actually trying to keep sanitized on time. Everybody thinks that it won't happen to them. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where our healthcare system been overwhelmed with the COVID-19. At the hospital where I currently work, there's no ICU bed. There's no intensive care beds. And that's, I mean, you're talking about South Africa, which is with good infrastructure as compared to a country like South Sudan.
It sounds like you are in the thick of things in South Africa, handling, you know, cases, everyday cases of people who are infected with coronavirus. But back home, in your home country, South Sudan, there are people who are literally being begged to just wear a mask. If you have an opportunity to speak to people in Juba who think corona is a hoax, what would you tell them?
Well, I'll tell them that, you know what, the coronavirus is real. People are losing. We're losing our brothers, sisters, siblings, uncle, father, and all those. We're losing people because of coronavirus. So coronavirus is real. It's not a hoax. And South Sudan probably is unlikely to be able to afford a vaccine in large quantity. And unless the world has mercy in people of South Sudan. And if we have a major outbreak in South Sudan, unfortunately, we're going to be wiped out of the face of the earth. So people must take it very serious. And they need to sanitize. They need to kind of isolate. They need to wear masks. And mask is a very important, can reduce the risk of contracting coronavirus to almost 70 to 90%. So people should really adhere to the rule and follow what the government actually is telling them to do.
That's Dr. Emmanuel Malesh Taban, a South Sudanese doctor saving lives in South Africa. He was speaking to me from Pretoria on Tuesday. More than 30 Sudanese ambassadors and diplomats who were fired recently are protesting the decision made by a government committee tasked with dismantling some institutions put in place by former President Omar al-Bashir. The spokesperson for the fired diplomat says the decision to suspend them was illegal because the committee did not follow the right procedures to fire diplomats. The former ambassadors say they will appeal against the decision in a court of law. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Ambassador Naim, who spoke to reporters in Khartoum earlier this week on behalf of the fired group officials, said the dismissal of 32 Sudanese ambassadors and diplomats were illegal and violates their human and professional rights. Al-Naim says since the beginning of the 2020, the committee appointed by the transitional government has suspended more than 5,000 employees in the foreign ministry alone, which he says represents half of the Sudanese diplomats and 30% of its administrative workforce. Al-Naim says the suspensions violate Sudanese laws.
Even the accountability process should be according to the accountability for the 2007, and the punishment should be taken in accordance with the law. The punishment could begin from a notification, reprimand, and warning, and it cannot reach the suspension level unless it in the court of law.
In August 2020, the committee tasked with dismantling the previous administration and recovering funds and assets stolen by officials in former President Bashir's government suspended 151 judges. The judges fought back, saying the decision violated the independence of the country's judiciary. Al-Naim calls the latest firings a massacre. He says the move will negatively affect the country's foreign relations, noting the country invested millions of dollars in training the ambassadors and diplomats, whom he says could help the transitional government strengthen its relations with other nations.
We have learned during our work at the Foreign Ministry that our main duty is to defend the Sudanese national interest, her integrity, Sudanese identity, and sovereignty. I swear by God that we have never borne down our heads to whoever they are. We were showing the world that Sudanese are people of magnanimity and hospitality, and we don't surrender to whoever.
A name says, if the transitional government continues to dismiss well-qualified employees in governmental institutions, it will hamper the delivery of services to the citizens. He says, the government should avoid establishing another totalitarian regime.
If we are establishing a transitional period, it shouldn't be owned by a specific group of people nor a particular political party, but it should be owned by the Sudanese people. The transitional period can never succeed unless accepted and supported by the Sudanese people.
A name says the men and women who were fired have the experience and knowledge that would help build Sudan's national interest, especially information regarding the national security.
We can never establish a democracy through a totalitarian procedure, no matter our huge revolutionary slogans. Whoever wants to achieve democracy should be courageous to accept others and work with them. Suspending such a huge number of employees from the Foreign Affairs Ministry has a direct threat to the Sudanese national security.
The panel that fired the diplomats and ambassadors was created in October 2019. It was tasked with investigating the assets and funds accumulated by members of the previous regime and to review employment documents at Sudanese institutions. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Kampala, where Ugandan-turned-musician-politician Bobi Wine is challenging longtime leader Yoweri Museveni for the presidency on Thursday. Halima Athumani talks to analysts about the significance of the election and what's at stake.
Stability, security, and peace have been President Museveni's key selling points to Ugandan voters, with the campaign themed Secure Your Future. Bobi Wine, on the other hand, has directed his campaign at young voters, promising freedom from Museveni's heavy-handed rule and pledging to create 5 million jobs should he assume power. Saira Birete, a pro-democracy political activist, says for many Ugandans, these elections are not about economic issues, but about redeeming the soul of the nation.
If you see Ugandans coming on the streets, they are simply saying they are tired of people that have hijacked the state. We have rising levels of impunity by duty bearers. This is an example of things that have made citizens of this country angry and hungry for change. So it's not about issues that this candidate is speaking well. No. Can we have our country back? Then we shall redefine how we will be governed.
Political analyst Morrison Rakakamba believes many Ugandans, especially the elderly and women, still see Museveni as the commander-in-chief who will ensure peace and stability.
In this crowd of presidential contenders, Bobi Wine has the charisma. He has more star power, especially because of his music, to galvanize young people. But there is nothing new that, in my view, that he's saying. But at the national level, President Museveni remains much more stronger, especially because of the constituents of the Ugandans who have had experience before of instability.
Ordinary Ugandans such as Ibrahim Walugembe agree that while Wine is appealing to them, they still would like a peaceful and stable country. Walugembe says the person who has talked about issues that affect him has been the president, His Excellency. Walugembe adds that even if the old man has been able to achieve much, he should retire so Uganda can get a new leader, because it's been such a long time. With a population of close to 42 million, about 70% are young Ugandans struggling to survive, motorcyclist Tamale Juma says he believes Wine is the only leader who will deliver the peace they desire. Tamale says, we don't have any peace in this country, and that because we are so poor, we work under a lot of hardships with no medicine in hospitals. The education standard is so low. He also says the poverty level is high, and because of that, people would like to see a new leader. Tamale says Museveni has failed for the 35 years he has been in power, adding, "We want to see if Bobi Wine will bring us better development." About 17.6 million Ugandans are eligible to vote in Thursday's election. Polling begins Thursday at 6 a.m. local time, ending at 4 p.m. According to the Electoral Commission, all 134 districts in Uganda have received polling materials. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandan president orders for social media blackout in Uganda. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
Why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting, and you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam, and you have to wait till maybe probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they feel or they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that's mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming is one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white-collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Ahead of tomorrow's general election in Uganda, the Ugandan president Yoweri Museveni says he has ordered the shutdown of social media sites in the country. He lashed out at social media companies for interfering in Ugandan politics and said Ugandans cannot tolerate such arrogance. Meanwhile, opposition leaders in Uganda say they have agreed to work together to protect Thursday's vote from being rigged. For VOA News, Mungume Debs Rakarinch has more from Kampala.
Clad in a military jacket, President Museveni addressed the nation Tuesday night ahead of the hotly contested elections and urged Ugandan voters to turn out en masse and vote for the ruling, the National Resistance Movement Party. Mr. Museveni, who has been in power for over 35 years, alleged that the opposition is planning to rig elections and also plotting to commit violence during and after the elections.
Nobody would intimidate you. Nobody will attack you. If anybody tries to do that, we shall get him or her. So therefore, don't fear anything. Go out and vote. You saw how the rioters were defeated in Kampala here. There's no threat we cannot defeat. Don't miss the chance to vote. You go out and vote. We shall defend you. We have got all sorts of means.
As on several previous occasions, President Museveni accused foreign powers for wanting to influence Ugandan politics. He particularly pointed out social media giant Facebook for favoring the opposition.
There's no way anybody can come and play around with our country to decide who is good, who is bad. This one we stop, this one we cannot accept that. Therefore, I'm very sorry about the inconvenience to those who have been using this channel. Even myself, when I had time, I was interacting with the young people through it. But we cannot tolerate this arrogance of anybody coming to decide for us who is good and who is bad. That one we cannot accept.
This week, social media giant Facebook closed several accounts belonging to ruling party officials and the government, saying those accounts were manipulating debate ahead of the elections. Earlier Tuesday, leading opposition candidates held a news conference and promised to defend Thursday's vote from being rigged. Patrick Oboi Amuriat is the president of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC.
Ugandans have been calling on some kind of unity. Today, you know, you can see that we are united in this struggle. I know that many have always thought that we should, you know, have a joint candidate, but there are different ways to unite, and this is the first step. in ensuring that we unite in calling on Ugandans to come and vote and also protect their votes.
Opposition leader Robert Chagrani, also known as Bobi Wine, called on the Electoral Commission and security organs not to be partisan.
I want to send a message to the Electoral Commission. You have studied our history. You know what a bad election has done to this country. So we call upon you to reflect on what you are doing. We call upon you to remember that the lives of 45 million people are in your hands, are on your shoulders. So it is important that you respect the voices of the people of Uganda.
The singer turned politician is the main challenger to incumbent President Yoweri Museveni. Over 18 million Ugandan voters are registered to vote in the January 14th polls for both parliament and the president. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
Still on social media, the attack on the U.S. Capitol has reignited criticism of social media and its alleged role in inciting violence. While Facebook and Twitter have banned President Donald Trump, there are questions about the future of online speech.
Last week's violence at the U.S. Capitol came after weeks of social media activity by President Donald Trump and others. Facebook was one meeting place. Jesse Lyric is the co-founder of Accountable Tech.
When you've got 3 billion people on a platform that is optimized for maximum engagement with no check from government, that's how we got where we are.
Social media giants such as Facebook, Twitter, and Snap responded by suspending or outright banning President Trump and some supporters' accounts. There's an effort to remove content such as the phrase "Stop the Steal," a rallying cry for those who say Trump really won the presidential election. Amazon Web Services, the web hosting provider for Parler, a conservative alternative to Twitter, took it offline, while Google and Apple banned the app from its app stores. Those who lost their digital perch are crying foul. Others say the shutdowns came too late and don't go far enough. There are renewed calls for laws on online speech and a push to reduce the power that tech companies have. Experts say more attention is needed as to what happens after so-called deplatforming.
That's the phase we're in right now, and it could be incredibly dangerous if we don't take that moment seriously.
Megan Squire is a professor at Elon University who studies the online activity of extremist groups.
It's not enough to just wash your hands of a person and say, well, they're not on my platform anymore. It really is what happens next.
And what happens next is pretty predictable, says Squire. Movement to alternative or alt-tech sites like Telegram surged in the wake of mainstream sites' actions.
A couple of the channels that I was watching were growing at, 100 and 200%.
For the internet giants like Facebook, Google's YouTube, and Twitter, this should be their moment of reckoning, says Jesse Lyric, co-founder of nonprofit Accountable Tech.
Their tools have been recruiters in many ways for these extremist movements. And so it's not enough to take action on individual pieces of content or individual users even. Like, they have to grapple with the extent to which they've been a primary driving force of all of this.
As the U.S. continues to learn more about what led to the chaos in the nation's capital, questions remain about the future of speech online. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
During the COVID pandemic, some schools are able to go to a so-called hybrid model where some students physically go to school while others remain at home and log in virtually. VOA Elizabeth Lee tells us about a robot connecting students and teachers in a hybrid classroom.
2020 has been a weird year for high school student Sophia Jensen.
It's very strange, especially considering this is supposed to be like the last year of high school, like the fun time. And it's also like the most important semester is first semester. And now it's just like all upside down.
Jensen's school, like others during the pandemic, is offering hybrid classrooms where some students are physically in school while others log in from home. One thing helping students and teachers feel more connected is this robot called Swivel. DJ Clovis is the director of special projects at Fairmont Schools in Southern California.
Imagine it almost if you had a student inside your classroom with a boom mic and a camcorder the whole time. And that's really what the Swivel does.
The swivel includes a base that pairs with any mobile device. This base has a sensor and is able to track a marker with a built-in microphone worn by the teacher. Vlad Tettelbaum co-founded Swivel.
Swivel robot, which is in essence follows the teacher around the classroom and focuses the video camera on them.
Again, DJ Clovis.
It's given our teachers their legs back to be able to teach in a classroom, to be able to walk around.
The teacher can use common video conferencing apps with Swivel. It's better than just teaching with a computer, says science teacher Sarah McGuire.
The students could actually see the kids that were physically here in the classroom.
Jensen says tech-savvy teachers have no problem with Swivel, but for other teachers, there could be user error.
The Swivel doesn't really follow them around the room. It'll sometimes just spin in like a random direction, and then they'll have to like chase after it. But when it does work, it's really nice because then it doesn't feel as much like I'm just staring at a screen. It feels a little bit more like I'm in a classroom.
Even when schools go back to normal, teachers say the Swivel can still help students who are out sick plug in to their classroom. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Arafati and his song, Bira Bira.
Yeah, Dana Lela Unique Arafati, featuring Cody Cody Mash. Bira Bira, I'll see you. Bira Bira, Fetisu, Bira Bira, Itabiligo. 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 Niya hajana tero fidonia de getala mine kota rabuna. Ageni Bira, Fetisu Bira, rabuna takio buwe dileta. Mata ali gugeli bataki fom fom. Mata silu iya haja guam guam. Ageni Bira, Fetisu Bira, rabuna takio buwe dileta. Bira Bira, Fetisu, Bira Bira, Itabiligo. 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 Ngachi niki madoso wadono ya, keri luri gasi, mili liyaro, yomotu liyaro, alumiro kozo damiri, liya liyaro. Milia, lia liaro, mili, lia liaro, milia, lia liaro, New Sudan. Bira bira, Fetisu, bira bira, Itabiligo. Bira bira, Fetisu, bira bira, Itabiligo. Bira bira, Fetisu, bira bira, Itabiligo. Bira bira, Fetisu, bira bira, Itabiligo.
Matakunta ma bira bira itabiligo. Matashilu iya jagwam gwam. Kene bira fetis bira fakir bira. Rabuna taki bwa dileta. Iya jatala min guwa bito selilo fakirlo. Matakutu galbak bata die hard wakad. Everything gonna be right. You are with them set no blanket.
Bira bira fetisu bira bira itabiligo. Bira bira.
We have been listening to South Sudanese artist Arafati with the song Bira Bira. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being with us. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Records.
Bira bira.